What up, listener? We wanted to take a second to thank you for listening to this Blue Wire podcast. Be sure to show your support to this pod by subscribing and dropping a 5-star review on iTunes, a follow on Spotify, or the appropriate dApp for any other platform you might be listening on. And if you're enjoying this show, chances are you'll like one of our 75 other sports podcasts. Find more shows you'll love at BlueWirePods.com. Thanks again for listening, and now back to your regularly scheduled podcast.
Hey, hi, hello, Hardwood Knox listeners. I am Dan Favalli coming at you with my super duper, incredibly esteemed, awesome times awesome, fantabulous, spectaculario, thinks that you can build a top five defense around Karl Anthony Towns and D'Angelo Russell co-host Andrew D. Bailey. Before we get started with some trade deadline primer craziness, a ton of housekeeping notes. We obviously last week did not begin our, what we're not calling, but we're just tentatively saying amongst ourselves, the daily-ish mailbag. The stuff with Kobe Bryant, it just didn't feel like the right week to do it, and we figured we'd let everyone sort of just go through that week. There's definitely a place to talk about basketball. We just decided to push it a week. We are going to start it this week, sort of. There will be one on Wednesday, and then we're probably not going to have one Thursday, Friday, because we will be releasing our trade deadline reaction sometime Thursday night. So that kind of takes up Thursday, Friday. But then we'll get back at it next week into more of a steadiness. We do not know if there will be one on Monday, which is something I didn't even mention to Andy just yet, because we are switching hosts from Sunday into Monday. So we're not sure if we're going to be able to podcast that one. But rest assured, it's happening. Andy and I have talked about it. It is still happening. And with that in mind, please continue subscribing, rating, and reviewing to Hardwood Knox on iTunes. You can also get us wherever else you are consuming your podcast: Spotify, Stitcher, Blog Talk Radio, Google Play, all that fun stuff. Subscribe, rate, review wherever you are listening to us at. But iTunes is still the best way to let us know that you're out there, that you're listening. It really, really helps the pod when we can see those ratings and reviews go up. So please keep them coming. If you want to be a superhero, you can, you know, you're using Spotify to listen to us, you know, subscribe to us there, but also subscribe and rate us and review us on iTunes as well. Follow the show on Twitter at Hardwood Knox. Follow Andy on Twitter at Andrew D. Bailey. You can follow me on Twitter at Dan Favalli. You can follow Blue Wire on Twitter at Blue Wire Pods. I am running the account over there, so you can be sure that the tweets will be wonderfully, blissfully mediocre. Also, please subscribe to our YouTube channel. Just go to youtube.com, search Hardwood Knox, and we'll come up. Subscribe, like all our videos or podcasts are being thrown up on there. Last but certainly not least, we just want to shout out this week's sponsor. That is Bet Online. You'll be hearing an ad read from them shortly, but thank you to them for making Hardwood Knox possible. Whew, that was a mouthful. Andy, how are you doing?
I am doing quite well. Ready to talk about trade rumors, trade deadline, trade this, trade that. Fun time of year for me, and I think a lot of NBA fans. I'm excited to dive in.
I'm excited to do this, basically, Who Says No Pod, because this is the first year I think we've done it where I haven't like hit you with them on the side. So it's going to be cool to see you going in blind. So maybe we can get more of a genuine reaction other than this trade is amazing, Dan.
Yeah, I've got the trade machine pulled up so I can input your trades in real time and, like you said, give some hopefully fun reactions.
There's a four-teamer that might bend your brain. Maybe I probably should have sent you that in advance, because listening to it might be overwhelming.
I think anything beyond two teamers bend my brain a little bit, just to be honest.
Yeah, same. Anything beyond two teams, maybe up to four players total, you lose me. We did want to get to some of the hotter rumors that have been circulating, though. It was reported during the friggin' Super Bowl, which was fantastic, that the Rockets were shopping Clint Capella to mainly a few Eastern Conference teams with the goal, with the intention of getting another big, but also a wing, and Robert Covington's the name that's been thrown out there. What did you make of that report?
I... I instantly went to like the list of all the player salaries in the league and was trying to find any teams that had a center and a wing that kind of added up to Capella's number and needed a center. And I had a really hard time doing it. And I guess since the report, we've seen some more rumors about who might be interested in Clint Capella. I mean, the Hawks have come up. I'm already blanking on who else has sort of surfaced as a potential Capella suitor, but we do this every time a big man is reportedly available. We just struggle to find teams where it makes a ton of sense. And for the Rockets, it's interesting because they don't really have another center beyond Clint Capella. They've been playing this sub 6'6 lineup for a while now with PJ Tucker at the five, and that's all well and good and fun in the regular season. But if you've got a 7-game series against Nikola Jokic or Anthony Davis or some of the other big guys in the Western Conference, it could be problematic. So it'll be really interesting to see if they trade Clint Capella, what they get back for him. I mean, are they going to truly go all in on the small ball that they've been playing? Are they going to be able to find somebody else to fill, you know, conventional center minutes? It was just a interesting report, to be sure. I don't think I was that surprised by it, though, because Houston always seems to they're always ready to make some kind of trade. And at this point, that's the tradable contract is Clint Capella's. So I wasn't stunned that his name specifically was brought up. It'll just be interesting to see what they look like if he's moved.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think even Woj mentioned that would have to be multi-team scenarios, because you look at the Hawks, they don't really have things of immediate value to send the Rockets. Although it was casually mentioned by Kevin O'Connor of The Ringer in his piece that if the Hawks do get Clint Capella, it's probably because they're getting rid of John Collins.
Stuff makes no sense to me, by the way. That I heard that on some podcasts this week about how they're hesitant to pay John Collins and they might trade him. I just don't get that.
I go back and forth. There was some defensive improvement from him towards the end of last year, and he's had his moments this year. I just don't know, unless you're going to play with a floor spacing five who's also a really good defender at both the four and five spots, I do think it could get really tough to build your team around both he and Trae Young then. And then if you're bringing in Clint Capella, maybe you're just a little bit more comfortable knowing what his price point is going to be over the next few years, whereas John Collins is probably going to command $20+ million in his extension. That it shouldn't, to me, it's not so much of an airtight case where if you're getting Capella now, you have to get rid of John Collins. I did, however, find it interesting that they may already be thinking along those lines.
Yeah, it's I guess I just don't get it. I think John Collins is really good. And when you're at the outset of a rebuild, I think you want to hang on to young talent if you can. I mean, right now he's averaging 22-12-2 per 75 possessions with a 63 true shooting percentage and a comfortably positive net rating swing.
It's not hard to have a positive net rating swing on the Hawks. So let's make that clear.
That's fair. I don't know. It's just odd to me. I don't think that Clint Capella gives you a higher ceiling than John Collins does. I think John Collins can do a lot of the same things that Capella can do while also being able to attack from the perimeter. It just that whole thing is just bizarre to me.
I don't know if he's the same rim runner or if you're going to count on him to be the same defender. I don't know. Who you would prefer long term? I think it's Collins is fit.
I also don't know. I'm curious to see what Capella looks like without James Harden. Because a great deal of his offensive value is the fact that he's playing with one of the greatest pick and roll ball handlers in NBA history. So I think it's fair to wonder what he's going to do if he doesn't have Harden spoon feeding him too.
That's also fair, but Trae Young's also pretty damn good as well. So
yeah, he's great. It's strange to me.
I find the Celtics' interest a little weird because...
Oh, that was the other team, yeah.
They can get... Capella's salary is manageable enough to where they can get there as part of whether it's a straight-up thing or most likely a multi-team scenario. But they've always gravitated towards bigs who have a little pick and pop to them, and Capella's more screen and dive. And I found it interesting that they'd be looking along those lines. I also don't think he helps you exponentially having to defend the beefier bigs that you might contend with in the playoffs, a Joel Embiid in Philly, even if you want to throw Al Horford in there. If you make it to the NBA Finals, does he help you against an Anthony Davis? I honestly, I don't know if he helps you a lot more than a Daniel Tice, than Grant Williams played phenomenally against Philly when they beat the Sixers on Saturday night. I just found it curious. I guess if you can get him for the right price, but I do wonder how much better off they would be just looking at potential playoff matchups with Capella, because it feels like he might be easier to play off the floor than some of their other options.
Yeah, I'm with you. That I was a little bit curious about the interest there too. I guess I'll go back to what I said earlier. It'll be really interesting to see what Capella looks like in a different system. I can kind of get the fit in Boston, but I like their sort of three-headed monster they've got at center right now. Tice can do pick and pop, like you said. Kanter's a great offensive player. I think Tice is a solid defender. And Robert Williams is interesting to me as your future like rim runner, rim protector. I feel like they've got all their center bases covered with those three guys. So I don't know if it really raises their ceiling a ton if they wind up with Capella.
I think you need to shout out Grant Williams as well. I will not stand to have his
shout
name
out Grant Williams
absent from your analysis.
Did you see we just got another rumor, by the way?
I did not.
Shams is reporting that now Miami's a suitor for Andre Iguodala. I don't know if that's shocking or not.
Probably look, not. Let's get to Andre Iguodala then. That's a good transition.
Yeah, do it.
The report just came out that he is fine sitting out the rest of the season unless Memphis trades him to a team that he wants to be on. Do we have a list of teams? I didn't see one in that report. Or are we just assuming it's the Lakers and the Clippers?
I think we're probably assuming at this point. I haven't seen a report either that says who it may or may not be.
So, and then Stephen Curry with the clapback, posting on his Instagram story, a picture of Iguodala holding a championship trophy, and then with the shush emoji. And I get it. Like, Iguodala didn't ask to be traded to Memphis. At the same time, you can't be mad at Memphis for wanting to get value for him just because they already got a first-round pick to house him. Like, that's just the game. And if anyone screwed Iguodala, it's the Warriors by sending him to Memphis. And it seems fait accompli that he's going to go back to Golden State next year anyway, and so that makes it problematic for Memphis to trade him. I think they could still get something if they send him to a team that's not on his destination. And at this point, you know how pro player I am, and I'm fine with players using their leverage, but it just seems that we're giving Iguodala this pass. You know, the Grizzlies have been a fun quality team this year, and you know, if I'm the Grizzlies and I can get anything whatsoever for him, I'm sending him anywhere but LA at this point.
Yep, and I'm with you 100%. I feel like he's the pass that he's been getting is starting to go away, though. I feel like it started even a little bit before all the Grizzlies players spouted off last night. I was starting to see, like, why are we...
Dylan Brooks forever, by the way. That was a great quote.
Yeah, I thought that was a great quote. It is interesting to me that I guess he's earned this at this point in his career, that he can just sit out and get paid $17 million for it. He's not the first guy to hold out in professional sports, obviously. But yeah, the whole situation is just interesting to me. I was kind of a fan of all the stuff that the Grizzlies said last night. So that'll be an interesting situation to monitor too. I don't think they have really any incentive to buy him out, especially if he's saying he's not going to take a discount in a buyout. I say hold on, and if nobody wants to give you even like a second round pick, just, you know, let him sit at home for the rest of the season.
For anyone who just didn't see it, Dylan Brooks said, a guy that's on our team that doesn't want to be on our team, I can't wait till we find a way to trade him so we can play him and show him what really Memphis is about. Just fantastic.
I love that there's some spunk with those young Grizzlies, both on and off the floor. They're one of the funner teams.
I mean, he basically told Andre Iguodala to fuck off, not in as many words. And so absolutely here for it. Is anyone else concerned too? And this is, you know, when you get into, would the Clippers give up their first round pick in a trade just to, if anything, keep him off the Lakers, or even those Detroit seconds that they have are pretty valuable. It doesn't bother anyone that he's 36 and probably hasn't played since June and probably leaving this summer. I just feel like that's not being talked about enough.
He's 36. He hasn't played since June. He's had some injury. He's not like injury riddled for the last few years, but he's had to sit out some games for typical mid 30s type stuff with the Warriors. I don't know how anybody can know what he's going to look like when he comes back. I think you're right on the money. That's something that should probably be talked about even more. I don't know how much he raises the ceiling for any team at this point.
Yeah, if you can get him for a second or something, I think he definitely helps a contender. Yeah. Or maybe if you're Miami, since you said that Shams reported they were interested, if you can get off one of your salaries for next year, I don't know who you give up to grease the wheels of that deal. You know, is this a Jay Crowder, Andre Iguodala special where maybe you're giving up James Johnson and then Justice Winslow, and like James Johnson is Justice Winslow is the wheels greaser to get off Johnson or maybe Deion Waiters. I don't know, but they basically have to match the salary dollar for dollar, if not save money on that trade. So that would be interesting. We're now going to take a quick break to tell you about our brand new sponsor, BetOnline. Missed your chance to bet on the Chiefs Niners in the Super Bowl? Fear not, listener. Blue Wire is excited to be partnering with BetOnline to help you win big no matter the time of year. With March Madness, the Masters, and Major League Baseball's opening day right around the corner, BetOnline has you covered for all your latest news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Plus, it's never too early to lay down your future bet for Super Bowl 2021. Head over to betonline.ag and use our promo code BLUEWIRE to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. We signed up. It's super easy. And if you're already making wagers, it's a fantastic way to support this podcast. Again, that's promo code BLUEWIRE, all one word, when you sign up at betonline.ag. Bring your best bets home with BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Did you want to take us through, I know you're doing the rumor tracker for Bleacher Report, and there have been like 8 different levels to the D'Angelo Russell rumors. Did you want to take us through the latest on that?
Well, I don't know if I can hit every level, but yeah, he was, his name was all over social media yesterday. I think the Knicks at one point were reported to have interest. I think that was Shams and John Krasinski at The Athletic who reported that. Kevin O'Connor reported that a deal was close and then kind of fell through when it got to the Warriors' hands.
That means that a deal was not close because the Warriors are the ones who have D'Angelo Russell.
Yeah. He said that Robert Covington was going to Houston, Capella to Atlanta, picks to Minnesota. And then the Wolves were hoping to flip those picks for Russell and Golden State denied. So maybe it was just a flat out denial. Like you said, but yeah, he's been all over the place, as you were telling me before we started recording. And even yesterday, I think it's probably difficult for some people to wrap their heads around why the Timberwolves want D'Angelo Russell this bad. Like, I get their desire, but maybe not this level of desire. I'll just say that he's been phenomenal offensively this season. Basically 27 points and 7 assists per 75 possessions, 4 threes per 75 possessions, 38% from three, a slightly above average true shooting percentage. He's an excellent playmaking scoring guard. His defense is still really, really bad. Take this for what it's worth, but the one number metrics like Raptor and Real Plus Minus and all that kind of stuff hate his defense. And so I think if you've got him and Karl Anthony Towns on the same floor, you're just going to get roasted on that end night after night after night. From like a purely basketball perspective, I get it. I think it would be fun. I guess, Towns and Russell are friends, so there's that too. But I think I'm with you, and I don't really understand the utter desperation they're displaying to get him.
Yeah, defense with Towns and D'Angelo Russell would just be absolutely awful.
In the tracker last night, I can just imagine teams would play the Wolves and just put those two in pick and roll over and over and over again.
Yeah, and look, maybe it changes once the Timberwolves win again with Towns in the lineup, and also maybe he'll just be more motivated having D'Angelo Russell there. But their Monday night loss to the Sacramento Kings, Karl-Anthony Towns, particularly at the beginning, looked about like his defense insulted Trae Young. Is pretty much where it was at the beginning of that game.
Personally, but his 16th straight loss, by the way.
That seems like a lot.
The Timberwolves have lost the last 16 games that he's played in. But anyway, go ahead.
No, that's all I have on that. It'd be a fantastic offensive pairing. I just don't get the obsession for the Wolves. I ultimately don't think the Warriors give D'Angelo Russell up now, because even if you get an unprotected pick this year, I just don't know how much that means in the 2020 draft. And it does seem like one the Warriors want to see an actual sample with Russell alongside Stephen Curry, and you're not even going to get a sample of him beside Stephen Clay. That being said, if the opportunity arises over the summer to trade him when they know where their pick falls, when you kind of see who else becomes available, are there any disgruntled stars? That just seems like the time for them to make that decision. And I also don't know what a package built around picks and young players does for them. They're a team that wants to compete again starting next season. And can you guarantee that they'll have one, the filler to flip for the next star player that comes on the market? Or are they even going to have like the assets? Is like D'Angelo Russell, I think, could end up being potentially more valuable in a trade for a disgruntled star than in, let's say, a top five pick in this year's draft. Maybe you need both, and then you'll probably need more than that. But I'm just saying, if you're looking at it, just the assets in a vacuum, I think I'd rather have D'Angelo Russell than an insanely high pick in this draft. I'm not sure. I'm going to say top five, but I haven't done enough draft research to be like, you know, top three. I'd rather just have D'Angelo Russell than any player that comes out of this draft.
I think that's totally fair. I haven't done a ton of draft research either. I've only written a couple articles about it. It does look like this has the potential to be a really bad draft class, like Anthony Bennett level, possibly. So, when you hear about 2020 picks being thrown around in some of these trade rumors, keep that in mind, because I don't think a lot of teams are going to place a ton of value on 2020 picks.
Yes, I think like situations like Marcus Morris with the Knicks, that might be something where you're going to need to give up another prospect or pick in addition to a 2020 pick, The draft is considered so shallow. Woj, this was late Monday night, I guess early Tuesday morning, said that I'm just going to be honest, this is nothing to do with Woj, did not understand this from the Pistons' perspective at all, unless they're worried about Luke Kennard, who has missed the past 20-something games with bilateral knee tendonitis. If that's a legitimate long-term concern, I get them maybe shopping him. The reported deal was, though, a package from the Suns that included Javon Carter, Elia Kobo, and a first-round pick. And so let's say it's unprotected in this year's draft. The Suns might end up in like that 7-10 range. I feel like Luke Kennard is more valuable than that, but again, maybe they don't want to pay him. He will be extension eligible this summer. And again, the bilateral knee tendonitis, perhaps they think that maybe there's something a little bit more sinister at play, in which case are the Suns then overpaying? I'm just the fact that, one, I'm mad because I have a Luke Kennard trade and I thought I was being trendy because he wasn't really mentioned in rumors before this. And I did that before the Woj report, but whatever. Two, I kind of like it for the Suns if they get him. They can go with the no point guard lineup of Booker, Kennard, Mikal Bridges, Kelly Oubre Jr., and then either Ayton or Baines. And I think Booker has proven that he has the playmaking chops to run a lineup like that. And I think the Twitter reaction, it's become clear that some didn't realize how well Luke Kennard is playing. He's someone who can't run full-time pick and roll, but he has some ball handling to him. He's not just this spot-up shooter. And so if you can get him for that price, I know the Suns aren't necessarily playoff-bound, but I think I end up really liking that deal for them and don't necessarily understand the value Detroit would be getting back.
So I think my initial reaction to that rumor was just confusion. I didn't really get it from either side, and then I started to write about it in the tracker, and I thought, you know what? I kind of like this for Phoenix. It was interesting that most of the reaction I saw from Twitter was, oh, I can't believe the Suns are going to offer a first-round pick for Luke Kennard. But again, if it's a 2020 first in the late lottery, like, that's fine. I think the chances of somebody in the middle of the 2020 first round being better than Kennard is they're not great. And like you texted me last night, it was sort of a wake-up call to how many people don't understand how good Kennard is. He's not like a superstar by any means, but this is a guy who's averaging almost 18 points and 5 assists per 75 possessions, shooting almost 40% from three, basically, I mean, virtually 40%, 39.9. True shooting percentage is well above average. I just pulled up a comparison of him and Ricky Rubio, and I too, as I was writing about it, I thought, man, that's kind of a cool positionless backcourt, Kennard and Booker. And then I saw somebody report that it might have even been Woj, they wanted to play Rubio, Kennard, Booker, and Oubre all together, which I don't like quite as much. But I think long-term, a positionless backcourt of, again, Kennard and Booker is really interesting to me. I mean, there's clearly going to be some defensive issues with those two, and it's going to be compounded by, you know, not having a ton of other great defensive players around them. But offensively, I really like the fit.
But I guess if you're pairing them with, you know, Oubre can be league average on nights, Bridges is good, you have Rubio, who can be feisty defensively, and then Ayton's been better defensively this year, and if you have Baines at the five, you can put together a lineup where... and I don't think Kennard is just, he's not as slow-footed as people make him out to be on the defensive end. But if you, looking at both him and Booker's net negatives, there are pathways to surrounding them with three okay to good defenders anyway. And I think that then works. I don't know. You've already paid Booker. Then you're going to have to worry about paying Kennard after next season. And then DeAndre Ayton's right behind him. Kelly Oubre Jr. is already on his next contract, and it's short. So you're going to have to worry about paying him in a minute. You've given Ricky Rubio a little chunk of change. So this team all of a sudden gets expensive. But just for the fit, the functional fit, I actually think I'd really like Luke Kennard on this team.
Yeah, I think I would too. And like I said, it took me a minute to kind of realize that. But as I kind of wrote through my feelings, I figured out that I liked it too. And I'm with you. I don't really get it from Detroit's perspective. I was thinking about the Pistons a while back. And, you know, as I do with many teams, it's time to blow it up and start over. And I was thinking who would be untouchable on the Pistons. And I don't think there's a single untouchable, but the only names that I thought were close were Kennard and Dumbuya. And so for Kennard to come up for that package that you outlined was a little bit surprising.
The last rumor I have teed up before we get into the trades was the one from, SNY's Ian Begley, reported that the Hornets and the Knicks have talked about basically what amounts to a Rozier and Malik Monk for Dennis Smith Jr. and Julius Randle swap. What is your reaction to that mega blockbuster?
Ambivalence. Julius Randle, I was kind of like ready to jump on a Julius Randle bandwagon if there is one after last season. I kind of liked the way he played. His shot selection, I don't love as much this season with the Knicks. I mean, I'm typically all for guys shooting more threes, but I think in his case, bully ball was an important part of his offensive attack and something that made him good with New Orleans. And I think he needs to get back to that somewhere. I think if he was playing with Devontae Graham, who does space the floor, maybe he'd have a little bit more room to attack. But this rumor doesn't really move the needle a ton for either team, in my opinion. I do think it probably makes the Hornets a little bit better. I don't know. I have no idea what it does for the Knicks. For someone to swoop in and bail Charlotte out of that Rozier contract, which doesn't look as bad.
It's the same. He's fully guaranteed in year three, unlike Julius Randle, but they're both actually guaranteed the same amount of money at $56.7 million.
But it's just, I don't know. It doesn't really move the needle for me either way. As the diehard, loyal Knicks fan of the pod, how do you feel about it?
Yeah, that's great. I actually like it better for them because I think Rozier has shown that he can play really well off the ball when operating beside Devontae Graham. And so I could see a pathway to where Neal Akina, RJ Barrett, Terry Rozier lineups actually fare pretty well. You know, Rozier can be feisty defensively on some nights. RJ Barrett has at least good positional size, and then you know Frank Neal Akina is going to be a future Hall of Famer. So I get that, and I've never really been a Julius Randle fan. I actually don't really understand it from the Hornets' perspective. Maybe they really like Dennis Smith Jr., but his fit next to Devontae Graham to me is harder to imagine than Malik Monk or Terry Rozier. And I've been out on Malik Monk for a while. I think ambivalence, though.
Randall's clearly the best player in that deal, right?
I would say yes, but I also, for the Hornets, you have PJ Washington and Miles Bridges, and you have Cody Zeller. Like, what are you viewing Randle as? Is he your starting five, or you... Like, I honestly, I don't know what they would be considering him. And so that makes it even weirder to me because you can't get by defensively with him at center. And if you have him eat into the power forward minutes, are you out on Miles Bridges? Are you just cutting playing time for PJ Washington as well? Maybe there's a way to make it work. this season, just looking at the minutes distribution, but long term, I don't see those three players being a viable, you know, front court rotation together.
Yeah, I think those are all fair concerns. Like I said, I don't think this is like an earth shaking rumor or anything. I guess I can kind of see the fit for Charlotte, and now I kind of see the fit for New York now that you've laid it out for me.
Do you have it? Do we miss any other major rumors? I know there's the Knicks are willing to trade Kevin Knox. By the way, the Knicks are going to be the most interesting team at the deadline because there's like a zillion different things that they might do. They were linked to D'Angelo Russell. Woj confirmed that they have interest in Andre Drummond, which is still bonkers to me. But they could also sell.
What they won't do.
What?
They're not going to trade franchise centerpiece Marcus Morris.
Look, I actually kind of – well, first of all, Marcus Morris, whole different story with – it just – the Knicks are a disaster, and he can't even give post-game interviews without – the Knicks can't even give post-game interviews without something happening or misogyny coming off, apparently. I kind of get keeping him if you're not getting more than just a very low-end first-round pick for this year.
Yeah. I'm being a little tongue-in-cheek, but he's been good for them. There's no question about that.
There are just so many different directions they could go. I wrote about this on Monday night, but it's just I'm fascinated by them because we just assume they're going to make the wrong call. But what is the wrong call going to be? Are they going to buy? Are they going to do nothing? Are they going to sell? Are they going to sell the wrong player? Are they going to get the wrong player back? So I'm very interested to see what the Knicks do. They call that, I believe, self-immolation. Or apparently I'm a fan, a glutton for punishment or self-inflicted pain. Let's get to some trades, though. Are you ready to play some Who Says No?
Yeah, let's do it.
I'm going to try and bend your brain right off the bat and get to the Clint Capella four-teamer that I came up with. I have two different versions of this based on whether Minnesota would want to save money, but I was trying not to give them, spoiler alert, Atlanta's involved, Jabari Parker, because he has the player option for next year, and I wasn't sure that they'd want him on the books. So I'll give you the first version first. Are you seated?
Okay, go slow because I'm going to update this in a trade machine in real time so I can see it.
Atlanta receives Clint Capella.
Wait, tell me the four teams real quick.
Atlanta, Houston, Minnesota, and Phoenix.
Atlanta, Houston, Minnesota, and Phoenix. All right.
Atlanta gets Clint Capella and Nene.
Atlanta gets Capella and Nene. Got it.
Houston gets Robert Covington, Aaron Baines, and Noah Vonleh.
Okay. Houston gets Covington, Baines, and Vonleh?
Yes.
Boy. Really, really testing my – there we go. Okay.
Now you're going to have to visualize these because you can't input them in any sort of trade machine unless you're on the
Oh, I can put
picks. Oh, there you go. All right. So Minnesota is going to get Evan Turner.
Okay. Okay.
And Brooklyn's 2020 first rounder via Atlanta. It's lottery protected.
Okay. There it is.
They will get
Minnesota.
That's Minnesota. Yes.
Okay.
Minnesota's also getting Houston's 2022 first rounder.
Whew. Okay.
Minnesota's also getting Houston's 2023 second rounder.
Okay, got it.
Phoenix is getting Jordan Bell.
Okay, Phoenix is getting Jordan Bell, who I think should be playing more, but...
Tabo Sefolosha, who I think should be playing more in Houston, by the way. Yeah, and I actually think he could help Phoenix. And then they're also getting, via Atlanta, OKC's 2022 first rounder. It's lottery protected, then turns into... 2 seconds, 2024 and 2025.
Okay, that goes to Phoenix?
Yes.
Okay. Is that it?
That's the trade.
Should I hit trade? Okay, let's see. Woo! It went through.
Now, my alternate version, it's easy to visualize, is that I just have Alex Len, Nene, and Parker going to Jabari Parker going to Minnesota because then they end up saving money this year. And that just impacts Atlanta's only getting Capella then. And so that I'd like, that was just, if they don't want to take on they're taking on a few million dollars with the Evan Turner acquisition. I saw you just send me the screenshot of the win projections.
I just want to make sure I got it right.
Yes, you did. I have in this version of the deal, I think I added Atlanta's 2021 second to Minnesota when they were only getting Nene, Len, and Parker. I'm not entirely sure why I did that when I'm looking at my notes, but that is the four-team deal as I'm looking through it. I actually like it. I don't know if there was a team that was going to say no. I think it maybe might be Phoenix, but if you're getting – look, there's a chance that OKC pick conveys with the track that they're on, and I like Jordan Bell. Not saying you should play him next to DeAndre Ayton, but you shouldn't be playing Baines next to DeAndre Ayton either.
I'm looking over, and I guess if the game is who says no, Phoenix was the first one that popped into my mind too, but I don't feel real strongly about that. I kind of like this deal.
And I have now I'm understanding why I included another second to Minnesota if they took Nene, Len, and Parker because of Parker's player option. So you're essentially giving them, they're saving money this season, but because Parker's probably going to pick up that player option, I think Atlanta throws in another second. And so whichever version is really fine with me. And then you're also eating up a roster spot. Or no, it's 3 for 3. They're still giving up 3. So I'm fine with whatever version. I just thought the Evan Turner one was cleaner and it still left Minnesota with some extra roster spots to maneuver with.
Yeah, I like it. I say push it through. Atlanta gets a player that they're after in Capella. Rockets get Covington and a big that I think makes sense for their system in Vonleh. And then Baines is, I think he'd be good in Houston as well. Minnesota gets multiple picks for Covington, which sounds like that's what they're after. Phoenix gets a pick and a young-ish player in Jordan Bell, essentially for Aaron Baines. I think this makes sense all around.
The next one's it's so much easier. Gonna give you an easy one here. The Pelicans.
Okay.
They get Tony Snell. You can already tell it's gonna be a banger. It's the Pelicans and the Pistons, by the way. Do you need to fire up your trade machine to visualize it?
Since I heard Tony Snell, I knew because I know where Tony Snell plays.
That's why you're on this pod, because you have knowledge like that. And then the Pistons get Darius Miller and either. I wanted to know if you thought, I was going to say Washington's 2021 second round pick. And I wanted to know if you thought they would also need the Pelicans' 2020 second round pick. I think they're saving so much immediate money in this trade that the one second round pick is fine. And for people who just don't, I'm not saying don't watch Tony Snell, but think that Tony Snell doesn't help the Pelicans. He has a player option for next year that's worth around $12 million. He's someone who can shoot the three ball. And if you've been watching the Pistons lately, he's running pick and roll and it's working. And so he gives you some positional size on defense as well. I think just when you're looking at the Pelicans, they have Brandon Ingram coming up to restricted free agency. Maybe they'll look at keeping Favors if they want to carry his cap hold. They have to worry about paying Lonzo Ball eventually if they want to keep him. Ditto for Josh Hart. They don't project as this massive cap space team this summer anyway. And so if you're worried about him picking up his player option, I actually don't consider that a concern. This trade might actually make less sense unless you're highly invested in making the playoffs this year if you think he's going to opt out, because then it's essentially a rental, because I doubt you want to pay Tony Snell that much money long term.
Okay, who says no? Maybe the Pelicans, but I don't. I get the logic for this deal for both teams. I don't think it's.
I was going to say the Pistons.
The second round pick.
I was actually going to say the Pistons because of how well Snell's been playing, but then I saw the return, I guess, that they're aiming for Luke Kennard, and I thought, hey, maybe they need to give the Pelicans a first in this or something. Who knows?
If they're unloading and starting a rebuild, I'm sure that Tony Snell's not a part of their visions for the future. And I'm not sure they're going to get much more than a second-round pick for him. So if some team comes calling with a second-round pick, I kind of get that from the Pistons' perspective. And then for the Pelicans, I think Tony Snell's a guy who looks better on a good team, like a lot of players, obviously. And I think he would fit pretty well with the Pelicans. They've got some positionless potential, and I think he would fit in well there. So this is another one. I think you're 2 for 2.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. That was that's just one. It seems like a needle nudging trade for the Pelicans. And for the Pistons, they're so close to the tax, save money. Obviously, they might be able to do that definitely not as part of a Luke Kennard trade, but maybe as a Derrick Rose trade. Still, this seems just something. I want to see the Pelicans be like mini buyers, just because I'm fascinated by them as well. Are you ready for another brain-bending one?
Potentially.
I have this written in as two separate trades, but I'm actually looking at it. I think a three-team framework works, so I'm going to give you the three teams so that you can punch them in.
Okay.
The Clippers, the Kings, and the Magic. You have no idea where this is going, do you?
No, I don't. I really don't.
Okay. So the Clippers would receive Bogdan Bogdanovich.
Okay.
Aaron Gordon.
Okay.
Kem Birch.
Okay. Got it.
Sacramento is going to be receiving Rodney Magruder.
Mr. Magruder. Okay. To Sacramento.
Fiondu Cabangeli.
Okay.
The Clippers 2020 first round pick.
Okay.
Detroit's 2021 second round pick.
Okay.
The Orlando Magic are going to receive Mo Harkless.
Hey, back to Orlando.
Montrezl Harrell.
Okay.
Jerome Robinson.
Wow, the Clippers are unloading here.
And I have penciled in Detroit's 2023 second round pick. I'm not sure whether it needs to go to Sacramento or Orlando. My gut says Orlando because Harrell's going to be a free agent. And this whole thing rides on whether they think that they seem committed to having Mo Bamba as their backup five. And so do you think that Harrell can play next to both him and Vooch, you know, whoever's on the court for them? I question that fit, but they really could use that just offensive stick of dynamite that Harrell is.
Okay, so that's the framework. Pushing it through. Successful.
It did. I had it as two separate trades because for some reason I thought it might not. I'm assuming the Clippers are willing to pay the tax after this. They are literally unloading the clip of assets. And what they need is probably another playmaker, maybe another ball handler, and definitely to maybe upgrade their front court minutes. They're not going to find that all in one player, but Gordon comes pretty close because I think he can play the four or the five for them. He can at least try to handle the ball, but he's not he might be an underrated playmaker, but he's not an exceptional one. I would be very interested for this. And then you're getting that playmaking shooter in Bogdanovich.
Okay. So my initial thought is maybe LA, because I just think Harrell's been really, really good for them.
I have zero desire to pay him.
That's understandable. He's like, I don't know. I just think he's been phenomenal this season. I get the concerns that a lot of people have laid out that he's maybe a little undersized come playoff time. And I think even though Harrell's been better this season, I think it's fair to say that Gordon has more versatility and maybe more upside. Kem Birch gives you a bigger body that you can use in the playoffs. And I think the fit with Bogdanovich would be really good with the Clippers. For the Kings, I get it. You're getting multiple picks for Bogdanovich if you don't want to pay his next contract. I think that's a decent haul, although we've already laid out the problems with the 2020 first. But if they do want to move Bogdanovich and somebody offers them a first-round pick, I think they'll have to think about it.
I also, part of this was, I know people might view Magruder as a net negative. I actually think he's better than he's shown this season. And so that's why he was sent to the Kings, because he can soak up some of that. Doesn't have the size, but is a better defender and can soak up some of the minutes that Bogdanovich leaves behind.
The more I think about it, the more I think it might actually be Orlando.
That's the team that I had penciled, because it basically prided upon the fact that they don't want to pay Aaron Gordon anymore, and they think that Montrezl Harrell is this good long-term fit with them.
Yeah. I think Gordon fits better next to Vucevic a little bit, but Vucevic being able to play outside is, I think you could start Harrell alongside him, honestly. I think if I had to pick one team that says no, it'd probably be the Magic, even though this system says that they're getting the most wins out of this deal. It's for whatever it's worth, it says minus two wins for the Clippers, minus one for the Kings, and plus three for the Magic. But I've got to like digest these trades and look them over for a while before I see what I really think about it. The more I look at it, the more I like it for the Clippers. You know, if they came out of this with Bogdanovich and Gordon, I think that raises their ceiling a little bit. I'm gonna push it through with the caveat that Orlando might say no.
I think the more I thought about it, I thought that Orlando would say no. Maybe, you know, there's framework where they get to keep Ken Birch, but I don't know how important that is if you're gonna have Vooch and Bamba and Harrell anyway. But they would be the team I'd circle. I do have a less complicated one for the Clippers though. And it involves the Grizzlies, if you need to fire that up.
Clippers and Grizzlies. Got it.
Grizzlies get Harkless, Robinson, Magruder.
Harkless, Robinson, Magruder. Okay.
The Clippers 2021st.
Okay.
And Detroit's 2021 second.
Okay.
And they would give the Clippers Iguodala and Jay Crowder.
This one says the Clippers are getting 667,000 too much, but I don't know. I don't know about the accuracy of this trade machine sometimes.
I might have done my math wrong, but they have other smaller salaries like Terrence Mann that they could send through to make it work.
667,000 is easy to clear. So I don't think that would be a holdup. So, I like it.
The only problem is you're using your best asset, that first round pick, and you're not addressing the center situation, but that's maybe something you could do on the buyout market.
Yeah, and I'm not as concerned about their center problems as other people are. I think they have so much talent on the wings, and this beefs that up a little bit. Like, if Jay Crowder can spend some minutes on tough perimeter assignments and save Leonard and Paul George from that task. Same thing with Iguodala too, by the way. I think there's just so much talent and versatility on the wings that I'm not as scared about the post presence of the Clippers as other people are. I think this makes plenty of sense. And I think we've probably talked about this a few times on the pod. I don't think the list of offers for Iguodala is going to like blow Memphis's socks off. So if someone wants to offer a first, even if it is in 2020 and it is coming from the Clippers, I think that's something they'll probably have to think about.
And I think the incentive here for the Clippers to give up those picks is because you're also getting Jay Crowder and his bird, right? So even if you lose Andre Iguodala, this isn't strictly a rental.
Yeah, I think Crowder would help them for sure. He's a bad shooter. But the fact that he takes so many forces defenses to at least pay attention, and I think his defensive versatility is just fantastic. Him as the small ball four in Utah the last couple of years was a really big part of their defensive prowess. So I think this trade really helps the Clippers for sure.
I have another simplistic one that I think is going to anger Lakers fans because they're not getting a star. But the more I thought about them, it involves the Lakers and the Pistons. But the more I thought about the Lakers, they have, as John Hollinger wrote for The Athletic, they could do the stepladder stuff where they trade 3-for-1 to get Kid Gilchrist and then go after Iguodala or go after a Marcus Morris. I just don't know if they have that in them. And you're not going, you know, even a Derrick Rose trade, I find it hard to come up with one that where they don't include Kyle Kuzma. And I don't know that they want to include Kyle Kuzma for Derrick Rose. I also don't know that Derrick Rose is the cleanest fit when you look at his shooting. I know they could really stand to beef up the Rondo minutes. That's still a concern. So I thought I went a little bit smaller here, and I think the Lakers come off substantially better still. Are you ready?
I am ready.
Detroit gets Quinn Cook and DeMarcus Cousins.
Okay.
They are also getting Los Angeles's 2023 and 2024 second round picks.
Okay, 2023 second, 2024 second.
And they are sending the Lakers Markieff Morris and Langston Galloway. Morris has a player option for next season worth $3.4 million.
There he is. Okay, let's see. Yeah, I think that helps the Lakers a lot.
The thought process for the Pistons is they're restocking just some of the second round pick chambers. They're far enough out where you can just at least think, well, where are the Lakers going to be? They have Anthony Davis, but LeBron's going to be older. You're also saving more than $4 million, so there's wiggle room under the tax. And this isn't Derrick Rose. This isn't Luke Kennard. These are two players in Galloway and Morris who most likely do not factor in to your long-term plan, and so there's not some huge opportunity cost. And maybe Quinn Cook can see the floor in Detroit when Galloway's gone, given how injured Reggie Jackson seems to be all the time. I'm not saying he's this by far keeper, just there. And I'm assuming DeMarcus Cousins would be waived at some point, but I think it's enough for them to think about it. The Lakers do have Talen Horton-Tucker, though. In that scenario, I might throw him on top of the picks and see if they would do Markieff Morris and Derrick Rose, who makes the same as Langston Galloway, for those 2 seconds and Talen Horton-Tucker. That would be the framework of the if they're giving up Derrick Rose.
I really like it for the Lakers. Galloway shot the ball well. I think Markieff Morris has got some potential as a stretch five, stretch four, excuse me. And I don't think, I don't know, I can't imagine many teams are going to line up to give a first for either of those guys. So if they're going to get multiple seconds, I think Detroit would have to think about it. So well done. This is another logical trade.
Are you ready for, is this one considered, it's semi-complicated because it has to be two separate trades between the Blazers and the Grizzlies.
Okay. Blazers and Grizzlies.
This is one where it was basically the Grizzlies are sending Andre Iguodala just somewhere that he doesn't want to go. So the trade is the Blazers are getting Bruno Caboclo, who's injured. This is for salary purposes. Andre Iguodala and Jay Crowder.
Okay, got it.
The Grizzlies are getting, this is where it gets complicated, Hassan Whiteside, who's been genuinely good.
He's been good
over the past few weeks. Rodney Hood, who has a player option for next year that he's probably going to pick up after tearing his Achilles.
Okay.
They're getting a 2021st from Portland, lottery protected for the next 3 seasons before it would turn into 2 seconds.
Okay.
They're getting a 2022 second from Portland.
Okay.
They're getting all of the cash that Portland can give, which is $5.6 million, which essentially offsets the difference in salary here.
Wow. Okay. I would hesitate if I'm Portland, just because, like you said, Hassan Whiteside's been kind of legit for them this season. His net rating swing is maybe looks better than, or what am I trying to say? Maybe it's a little bit artificially inflated because he plays so much with Lillard, but he's about the only healthy center on the roster right now. So I'm not sure I would want to do that, and especially if Iguodala's not listed the Blazers as one of his preferred destinations. I don't know. I guess if they get Yusuf Nurkic back, it makes a little bit more sense. But I'm going to say the Blazers probably aren't keen on this one.
So the deal that went in tandem with this is that the Blazers would also trade Mario Hezonja into Memphis's trade exception, or just, you know, the minimum exception. And then Portland ends up ducking the tax entirely this season as a result of this trade.
Yeah, that makes sense because it is kind of a stopgap year for them. That's a big consideration. So that makes it a little bit more palatable for the Blazers, I think. And Iguodala, even if Portland's not on his list of preferred destinations, I think if you're going to a team with Damian Lillard, it'd probably be harder to say no. I'm gonna sit out the rest of the year. I still think it would be tough for them to lose basically the only center they have and someone who's been good this season. But I can
with Scal injured too and Collins injured. Yes, I get that thought process. You have to roll, so I have two quick ones. This one I don't even know if it's worth punching in because it's two separate trades as well. So I wrote it down in sum though. So the two separate trades, Boston would end up with Cody Zeller and Dwayne Bacon.
Okay.
Charlotte would end up with Romeo Langford, Vincent Poirier, Enes Kanter, and then Boston's 2021st.
A first-round pick for Cody Zeller?
Cody Zeller's a plus-minus superhero, even though he's injured all the time.
No, he was really – the lineups with him and Kemba Walker were great for a while, and I do like Cody Zeller.
They look, Boston also,
I like what Canner's been doing for Boston this season, though. Is that crazy?
I don't think it's crazy. If you get Cody Zeller, who's going to give you more defensively, I would think that
defensively, and he's probably a better role guy too.
You think a first round pick because they're getting Langford is too high, Boston has a 2022nd. It's going to end up being Brooklyn's.
Yeah, it's interesting. I just don't know if Zeller is that much better than Cantor. That'd be my hesitation on that one.
That's fair. The last one I have is one that I'm like rethinking in real time because it involves Luke Kennard, but the Detroit Pistons rumor got me, it's actually not the last one I have, but we both have to go. The Detroit Pistons rumor with Kennard, I don't really know what it takes to get him. Like maybe it takes less than we think. I'd initially thought that it would take, I'll say, a small ransom. So I had Philly sending them Zaire Smith in addition to their first round pick this season and Atlanta's, the 2022nd round pick, 2021 second round pick from New York.
I like that deal. Zaire Smith hasn't played for the Sixers really at all.
I do think we need to remember that he almost died like 18 months ago or whatever it was. And I still think he has some upside. And so if you're the Pistons and you get a wing under cost control for a couple more years, plus two picks. But I'm looking at this, and unless you think that Zaire Smith is just completely done, it almost feels like Philly's giving up too much based off what Detroit would be getting from the Phoenix trade. Or maybe it's about even. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I actually really like that for Philly. I don't think a 2020 first-round pick does them a ton of good. And like I said, Zaire Smith hasn't really played for them, and they get a guy who can theoretically do a lot of the shooting and floor spacing that Redick did for them last year, but I also think he's better on the ball than Redick's ever been. If I were to pick a team that might hesitate, it would be Detroit, just because I think you've seen a lot more from Luke Kennard than you have from Zaire Smith, and they're in a similar age range. So unless they really just, you know, they're scared of the knees and they don't want to pay the next contract, I think Detroit would hesitate, but I get the logic from both sides on this one too.
And yeah, so the first round pick was the OKC one, not Philly. So I misspoke there. The also
up a little bit, but not a. I mean, still middle of the first in this draft isn't going to be great.
Well, so it's top 20 protected, which I think is the complication.
Okay.
And so what the initial deal? I also had them giving up. It's a 2023 second round pick in addition to all the other picks. That's going to come from Atlanta, Charlotte, or Brooklyn. It's the most favorable. And so that was maybe that's the framework still then, because if you're even hesitant for Detroit, I think it's those, the 2021 from New York, the 2023, let's say Charlotte will be the worst team. So let's say 2023 Charlotte's pick, OKC's, if you want to call it a fake first. And I mean, Philly also has a stockpile of other seconds too. I mean, so that would be the general framework of that deal.
Yeah, I don't mind it. I love it for Philly. I think you, as usual, have hit a bunch of potential trades out of the park. This is your wheelhouse.
That's fine with me. They're fun to come up with. People will hate them. I think everybody disagrees. You think we undervalue your players, overvalue everyone else's. That's fine. But those were just some of the machinations that are moving through my mind at the moment.
I love it. I've got some screenshots saved that I'll put up with the links to the podcast later. And if you want to yell at Dan for these fake trades or my reactions to them, you can find Dan on Twitter at Dan Favale, F-A-V-A-L-E. I'm at Andrew D. Bailey. The show is at Hardwood Knox. The podcast network is at Blue Wire Pods. As always, rate, review, and subscribe to the show. If you've already done that, tell your friends, family, neighbors, acquaintances to do so. And until next time, we leave you with a shout out to Benno Udry and Kyle Anderson.